We did the mesh
with the monster mesh.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
Good old classic Boris.
Love it.
It's the perfect entrance. That's the word. Entrance.
The perfect entering.
Perfect entering to this episode. Such a good enter.
I love it when it enters.
I love when we have music enters.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween. I should have a voice, so I apologize in advance. I tried to drink some tea with some honey for this sweet, succulent sound because I was rules for two nights straight last weekend.
Oh. You had honey with tea, or tea with honey, and I have beer, so.
One of us is obviously winning.
It's if clearly my beer.
The idea of like warm beer with honey just is like, hot cider though.
You could have a toddy.
Oh, I could have a toddy. What? Okay. Get that next.
You're like, oh, okay.
Are you being anything for Halloween?
I don't know. I haven't planned anything because I wasn't sure what we were doing. But you know, I have the costumes in the closet I could always go through.
It's always good to keep a couple costumes in the closet.
What about you?
Harley Quinn.
Oh, that's right.
I got her. I finally got her. My full cosplay. And as a cosplayer, you usually don't cosplay on Halloween. But since I don't have anything not scary for costumes, I'm going to wear Harley.
Very nice. Very nice.
I usually save scary for work.
Yeah, you've had some good ones.
Dude, I won scariest my first year. And it was one of those moments where I was like, either this is awesome, or I just definitely terrified everybody, and everyone's going to hate me.
I think you could go both ways.
Because that was when I was what? I was Billy the Puppet.
Uh-huh.
From Saw.
Yeah. You definitely freaked Gina out.
Dude, Stacy came into the bathroom immediately, saw me, turned and walked her out.
She's like, nope.
Yeah, she's like, no.
This is how horror movies start, and I'm not going to do that.
Yep, and then I won second place for It.
Yes.
All Hallows Eve is the best night day.
Nice.
And it's on a Saturday and it's a full moon.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a little different this year. Not as fun as it could be, but still probably a good time.
I think so. I mean, to be honest, we've made Halloween into what it is. Technically, it was All Souls Day in England and people would exchange pastries and prayers for the deads.
I thought you meant us, because I was going to say, yes, we have, Liz. We have made Halloween.
We did. We did it.
It was just us. Before us, it was nothing. And then came Halloween.
Exactly. And don't forget to wear your masks and costumes to be avoided by and recognized by a ghost.
Yes. And also to prevent the spread of COVID.
That's also true. Wear your mask. And don't forget to carve a jack-o'-lantern into a turnip or a potato. How about that for baked potatoes? Yeah, I don't think the Celts were really thinking that through when they were like, you know what? I think a good way is to, instead of eat our potatoes, let's actually carve scary faces to ward off evil spirits. That's probably why they picked turnips.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you were hungry though, could you like go outside and just grab it?
I don't think it's a cooked potato, but you could cook that potato.
Yeah,
do they eat raw potatoes?
I don't know.
Like an apple?
I mean, I have had raw potato.
I'll take my potatoes cooked. Thank you. Cooked, fried, steamed, boiled, mashed, name it. Done. Potato.
All the potato.
Should we get into our monster mash?
I'm super excited for the monster mash.
All right. So we're going to be talking about pretty much anything and everything. We took all of your guys' favorites from the two seasons and kind of literally mashed them together with a little did you knows, with a little like pop culture popping facts and a little bit of storytelling.
I'm excited. Ooh. I was doing these notes last night and I was super, super excited to talk about this stuff. So
whoop whoop.
Do we want to do a couple a couple people and then do a monster, or?
Let's do two and then talk about a monster. That way it keeps us moving.
Moving right along.
Moving right through, like a horror movie. You just keep on going. You don't stop because then you die.
Oh. Yeah. That wouldn't be good.
But in Supernatural, you never die.
That's true. Everybody always comes back.
That's true.
Okay, so I just want to say this before we start. I got all my information from my favorite source, Wikipedia, and also a website called bloodydisgusting.com.
I know that website.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yes. and I will also use and cite my sources. I used to not knock your Wikipedia. Smithsonian.com.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Britannica.
That right there just says, Missy didn't actually do any work, and Liz sat here and actually researched things. Thank you.
History.com, biography.com, oh, AmericanHauntingsInc.com, Legends of America, and all that's interesting.
Do you listen to the American Hauntings podcast?
I do.
I like it.
Actually, I just found out my brother listens to podcasts.
Does he listen to this one?
Sometimes I have to get him back on it because he listened to one of our poorly audioed episodes.
Don't do that.
I did it on the title, which I don't blame him. It's a cool title. But yeah, the audio was a little rough, so I told him to go back and try again. But he likes the same podcast I do. What?
That's awesome.
Yeah. It is Morbid.
Oh, okay.
He didn't know Morbid had another podcast.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Crime Countdown.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. You want to know your top 10 Texas killings? Crime sure. Countdown. Top 10 murders of the 90s? Crime Countdown.
I think I follow that on Spotify, but I haven't listened to it yet. I just started listening to Paranormal Hotline.
Ooh, I don't know that one.
It's like two, I believe that they're in Ireland. Mm. Two Irish peeps.
Myths, Mythologies, and Monsters, I think, is also of the Celtic persuasion.
Oh. Again, you say it a lot better than I did. I'm like, they're Irish people. You're like, the Celtic persuasion.
And also, I started listening to, and you can listen on Spotify and on iHeartRadio, 13 Days of Halloween by Aaron Mankey Bloomhouse and Grim and Morbid. And they're like 20-minute, maybe 14-minute to 20-minute things with... Keegan, Mike, and Key as the caretaker. And it's a really neat little story. They do one per day, so obviously you can go back and listen to them now. And it's just neat little stories that are kind of like scary stories to tell in the dark. But it's surround sound, so let you listen with your headphones on, and it sounds like you're there.
I heard that in the commercial. I just heard the commercial the other day, and I wanted to start listening to it. It's like you really need to wear your headphones.
I listen to it in the car, to be honest.
Yeah, but that's like, fine. But your car has multiple speakers in it.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably do it anywhere, I think, just to get the feel that you're there.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, I love it. And it's not too long, so it's a great, like, I've been listening to it every day leading up to Halloween, get myself in that spooky spirit.
Not too long-winded like some people we know.
Me?
What? Us? Huh?
This one is going to be hopefully not too long, but potentially could be long.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Okay, do we want to, what do we want to call these little...
Spooky snippets.
Spooky snippets. Our first entry.
In our spooky snippets.
In our spooky snippets comes from Kristen.
Hi, Kristen.
Longtime listener, first time caller. So we put out on Twitter what were your favorite monsters from the first two seasons, because obviously that's only as far as we've gotten. So Kristen says that Bloody Mary still freaks her out. She says she won't stand in front of a mirror. But she also likes the gin. But she says, I think I like the gin the best for a monster that I wouldn't want to kill. I think she sympathizes with the gin a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's trapped.
Yeah. She says, I mean, yeah, they're draining people, but they're still fixing their crap lives and making sure that they get everything they truly want. Plus, they glow blue.
That's true. And they have those really cool tattoos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, Bloody Mary still freaks me out, too. I feel you.
I remember doing that in, I think I've talked about this before, but we used to do it in elementary school in the one bathroom in the basement. Like, all the girls would get in there, and there was this giant mirror in there, and we would all turn the lights off, after, like, you know, when you go after lunch or whatever. And then all you hear is all these girls screaming and running out of the bathroom.
We never did it at school. We did it at my house, but my house was super old and had, like, a clawfoot tub.
Extra creep factor.
Super creep factor. Not to mention my house was actually haunted, so like I don't know if it was Bloody Mary, but we definitely got a response.
There was something.
There was something, and she still freaks me out. Like sometimes I won't even stand in a bathroom. I make sure I walk out before I turn the light off.
Mm-mm. Oh, I do that all the time. Nope. Or even kind of like if you like duck down a little bit so you can't be seen in the mirror and kind of.
When I was young, I would try not to wake up, so I would leave the light off. Because I was like, okay, maybe if I don't open my eyes and it's not too bright, I won't wake up and go right back to sleep. Not anymore. No, I turn that shit on.
You're like, mm-mm.
I light that bathroom up.
I want to see everything.
Yeah, like I'm flashlight under the tub. All right.
You're not going to get me.
Our next entry in our spooky snippets comes from the Boondocks podcast.
Hi, Boondocks podcast.
Hello. And they say, the Wendigo. I think it's the first time I'd ever seen it in any show. So it was original and had a very interesting backstory. It's basically a human that's lost its humanity. And I think this is also the first, besides like any paranormal show or unsolved mystery type deal, that I also saw the Wendigo.
Yes, me too.
And Robert Englund's show. He mentions the Wendigo because he mentions one of the guys I got. So do we want to talk about those two monsters?
We can.
Bloody Mary and the Wendigo.
Bloody Mary. So, Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary. Don't say it a third time.
BM. That's what she is now. Is a legend consisting of a ghost, phantom, or spirit conjured to reveal the future. She is said to appear in a mirror when her name is chanted repeatedly. The BM apparition may be benign or malevolent, depending on historic variations of the legend. BM appears... Appearances are mostly witnessed in group participation play. Now, I remember when we were on our other podcast. Can we talk about our other podcast? Our first cast?
First cast.
I had discussed this on one episode that we did, and it was like unmarried women with... It was like the weirdest thing. Like back in the Victorian era, unmarried women, to see who they were going to marry in their future, would look in a mirror and light a candle, and then, like, walk up the steps backwards or something. I can't remember the exact thing. I probably should have looked up again, but I just thought it was absolutely ridiculous that that's, like...
Yeah, you had to walk backwards up the stairs.
And... Yeah, in a Victorian dress with a candle and a mirror.
It was all about women, because, like, guys, I don't think guys do this. Do guys play Bloody Mary? I'm pretty sure they don't. They probably
I don't
play,
think
like,
they do.
I don't know, they play, like, Bloody Knuckles.
I was gonna say, like, Bloody Bob, but yeah.
And then there was the one that it... ties to like females coming of age.
Yes.
Which is why it's always young girls playing Bloody Mary. That's true. When do we stop playing Bloody Mary? Like no sororities are playing. I feel like that's a really good, like if you're gonna haze someone, just Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary, yeah. They're probably doing though like light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Mm. We also did that growing.
Like in The Craft. We tried that too. Didn't work like the movie.
Dude, it kinda worked. We felt like people were getting lighter. I don't know. Maybe it was just because we were really wanting it to happen.
You were willing it. So Bloody Mary's actually been the topic of more films than I thought it would be. So there's Urban Legends, Bloody Mary, which I did not know that there was more than one Urban Legend movie. And I'm kind of upset about that because I really like that movie. Now I feel like I need to go find the other two.
Yeah, I didn't know there were more than one either.
Yeah, I had no idea. So Urban Legends, Bloody Mary is a 2005 horror film by Mary Lambert and is the third and final installment in the Urban Legends series. There was also another Bloody Mary in 2006 where the film was actually set in a psychiatric hospital.
Okay.
I should have looked that up because that kind of, like, I'm intrigued by that. Then there was Dead Mary, which is a 2007 film based on a screenplay titled Bloody Mary. It's like the early two, they seriously go in a row, the early 2000s. Because then there's The Legend of Bloody Mary in 2008, which includes a character, Amy, who goes missing for a good while after playing the game Bloody Mary. Oh, no, excuse me. She goes missing for good after playing the game Bloody Mary. And then in 2018, there was a horror comedy called Ghost Killers versus Bloody Mary.
Okay, I like that. I don't know what that is, but I want to watch it now.
It's about a group of ghost hunting YouTubers that are called to a school to calm down the students after Bloody Mary appears. And as I read that, my first thought was Ghost Facers.
I was like, Ghost Facers? Are you there?
Yes. Ghost Facers had a movie and they fought Bloody Mary. That's what I thought happened. So then Bloody Mary's also showed up in TV shows. Of course, Supernatural.
What?
The X-Files, Ghost Whisperer, and another CW show, Charmed. That might have been a WB show. I don't know.
Okay, I watched Charmed and Ghost Whisperer, and I don't remember her being in either of those.
Oh, well, the one Charmed episode, it says it involves a demon who makes killers from different horror movies come to life, and one of them is Bloody Mary.
Okay.
And then this I really want to find, because I think it would be exciting, or entertaining, not necessarily exciting. There is a web series called The Bloody Mary Show. It's a British comedy web series which portrays Bloody Mary's daily life.
Okay, I'm curious.
So, I mean, we found Busty Annabelle Doll's Twitter. I feel like we need to watch Bloody Mary the web series.
I'm in for this, because I'm curious what she does when she's not in that mirror.
I don't know. It could be anything. She probably goes down to the grocery store, you know. Like,
checks her hair, fixes it.
Gets her kale.
Washes in the well. The usual stuff.
You know, the norm.
So this game goes back at least to the 1970s. And the tale is you stand in front of a mirror with one candle, in the dark, alone, chanting Bloody Mary, or I believe in Bloody Mary, or I killed your baby, Bloody Mary.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
Let's not start that way.
Yeah, I feel like you're calling her out then. You're not just like asking her to show up.
You're going to piss her off.
So she supposedly appears and scratches the face of the person. Or the mirror will drip blood.
Ugh.
Or the girl's hair will turn white as if she's sucking the life out of them. Or the girl will disappear without a trace, which ties into that what you were saying about that pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
And
bye
obviously,
bye, Amy.
Bye-bye, Amy. R.I.P. And there are three options, some of which I kind of talked about when I talked about Bloody Mary, which one being Mary Tudor, who was actually nicknamed Bloody Mary, though she wasn't any more violent than her father, Henry VIII, or any monarch, really. She was declared, declared illegitimate after her mother was divorced by her father. So her mother was Catherine. She was divorced for Anne Boleyn. She reigned for 5 years and killed 280 Protestants by burning them at the stake as heretics, which isn't really bloody, but it's how she got her name, I guess, for killing them.
It's more Bernie.
Yeah, Chrissy.
I had hot dogs for dinner too, and I just thought of like crispy hot dog skin. Okay, I'm sorry. Good.
She tried to restore the old church, which many Protestants actually fled in her first year of reign, but those who didn't were actually killed. And her most famous person was the Archbishop Thomas Cranmer, who was actually the first Protestant Archbishop of Canterbury, who was also the advisor to Henry VIII and Edward VI.
And she killed him. She had him killed. Oh, my God.
She had him burned at the stake.
Well, why is that your go-to way to kill somebody?
I mean, they could have beheaded him. That was a big thing in England, too.
Yeah, like drawn and quartering. Like, why would you burn them?
I don't know.
Gross and smelly.
Oh, it would definitely not smell good.
Yeah.
The second one is potentially Elizabeth Bathory. She's known as the Queen of Blood or the Blood Countess.
Oh.
She was born in Transylvania.
Hmm.
And this Hungarian countess also is believed to be the inspiration for Bram Stoker's Dracula. She became engaged to Count Ferenc Nadanci at age 11.
What?
Which you may have also given birth to an illegitimate child before marriage. And she was married at 15.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
So on December 26th, the day after Christmas, which I don't think at this time was Christmas, 1609 or 1610, depending on which one you're going with, Count Grigory Thurzo investigated Chet Castle and found Bathory directing torture sessions on young girls. Like, found her right smack dab in the middle of a torture session.
Excuse me, you're going to have to come back. You see, we're in the middle of this.
I'm a little busy right now.
Do you have an appointment?
What she would do is abduct peasant girls or use her own servants. And known tortures include jamming pins and needles under fingernails.
Oh, God, no. No.
In the warm summer months, was known to slather honey, leaving the girls to be attacked by bees and ants until they died.
Ugh.
When it was a little too hot outside, don't worry, torture's got you for the winter. Because she would have no problem forcing them to take deadly ice baths. She was known to bite chunks of flesh from the girls. And one story includes one girl being forced to cook and eat her own flesh. Hello, truth or dare. That happens in the movie. She was also known to cut off the noses and lips of girls and was convicted of at least 80 counts of murder. However, it could be up to 260.
Why their noses?
It's never proven that she actually bathed in blood, although that is a rumor that goes along with her. And while she was a child, she was actually taught by her uncle in Satanism.
Oh.
Yep. And then the final potential Bloody Mary is Mary Worth, who was known as a witch.
A witch.
And she lived in a cabin alone in the forest, known for selling herbal remedies.
I mean, obviously. Is that obviously, a
textbook witch? Come
seriously.
On.
Why doesn't she just have a blinking sign?
Right. Did she have a wart, too?
Was she green?
So soon kids would go missing. Another believed she was part of the reverse railroad, in which she would bring in slaves, and she would actually torture those slaves for her rituals.
Ooh.
There's also the legend that she was a part of the Salem witch trials, but I looked it up. There's no one by that name in the Salem witch trials.
Oh,
there's tons
news.
Of Marys, but there's no Mary Worth.
Fake news.
She was, however, violently executed for being a witch, which is why she might be angry and potentially Bloody Mary.
Yeah, I'd probably be pretty pissed too. I'm just trying to sell my herbal remedies and save myself for people.
My tiny little cabin in the woods.
Yeah, I don't want to be around people. Is that so bad? Like,
I don't want to be around people either. I feel you, sister.
I'm going to be Mary in the woods.
So next we have, thanks to the Boondocks, the Wendigo.
The Wendigo.
Actually, I went into a lot of detail with the Wendigo last time, so this time I'm just kind of mentioning a couple of stories. So there is one famous Wendigo hunter.
Oh, a hunter.
Mm-hmm. He is a Cree Indian shaman known as Jack Fiddler.
On the roof?
In the huts.
Sorry.
he is known to have killed, or he claims to have killed, 14 Wendigo. And as a shaman, he was one of the people they believed could actually see the Wendigo in a person. So if somebody believed their family was afflicted by the Wendigo, they would bring him in, and he would try to save them. And if they were beyond saving, then he would be forced to execute them. He was, however, arrested at the ripe old age of 87.
Whoa.
For murder.
Oh. Killed a guy that wasn't a Wendigo?
Well, Cree Indian law isn't necessarily the law. So whereas he thought he was saving these people, people saw him as just killing people. He and his son actually said yes. They completely went in and were like, yes, we did it. So there was no fighting it. They pled guilty. Many believe Wendigo roam the woods and prairies of northern Minnesota and Canada and have been spotted in northern Ontario near the Cave of the Wendigo, which, no offense, like, you have a Cave of the Wendigo, don't go there.
It's just the name. There can't be any there.
There's no Wendigo there. And the town of Kenora in Ontario. So obviously, Wendigo are cursed to wander the land eternally, seeking to fulfill their never-ending hunger for human flesh. Otherwise, they will starve to death. In 1878, a Plains Cree trapper from Canada, known as Swift Runner, he was married with 6 kids, and he worked for the Hudson Bay Company as a trader. In 1875, he actually served as a guide for Northwest Mounted Police. However, during the winter of 1878 to 1879, his son died of starvation. It was very cold and they didn't have enough supplies.
Mm.
And soon, Swift Runner gave into the Wendigo psychosis, which was a syndrome that creates an intense craving for human flesh as well as a fear of becoming a cannibal. It's like you want to eat the people, but you don't want to eat the people because you're going to become a cannibal, but you're so hungry for the people.
Such a conflict in my head right now.
So eventually they go crazy. Instead, he chose to kill and eat his remaining family instead of trekking the 25 miles to the Hudson Bay Company post for emergency supplies.
So he just, oh.
Yeah, he killed his family, all the 5 kids and like the wife, because he didn't want to walk 25 miles.
I still would have went over to the neighbor.
He was executed at Fort Saskatchewan. So that was the end of Swift Runner. There has been a Wendigo that was sighted in Rosesu in North Minnesota from the late 1800s to the early 1920s, and every time the Wendigo was spotted, a mysterious, unexpected death occurred until it was no longer seen.
Oh.
Wendigo.
Wendigo.
Wendigo hell no.
Wendigo hell no.
Mm-mm.
So, although distinct from how it appears in traditional lore, one of the first appearances of the character inspired by or named after a Wendigo in non-Indigenous literature is Algernon Blackwood's 1910 short story, The Wendigo. His work has influenced many of the subsequent portrayals in the mainstream horrific fiction, such as August Derleth's The Thing That Walked in the Wind in Ithaca, which were in 1933 and 1941, which in turn inspired the character in Stephen King's novel Pet Sematary, where it is a personification of evil, an ugly grinning creature with yellow-gray eyes, ears are replaced with ram's horns, white vapor coming from its nostrils, and pointed decaying yellow tongue.
Ooh.
These works set the template for later portrayals in popular culture, at times replacing the Native American lore. So it's like these kind of took over for what the folklore actually was. An early short films by Thomas Pynchon, Mortality and Mercy in Vienna, which was first published in 1959, the plot centers around a character developing Wendigo syndrome, which you were talking about, and going on a killing spree.
That Wendigo psychosis, man. Nothing to mess with.
A character inspired by the Wendigo appears in American comic books published by Marvel Comics, created by writer Steve Englehart and artist Herb Trimpe. The monster is a result of a curse that afflicts those who commit acts of cannibalism. First appears in The Incredible Hulk, number 162, which was April 1973, and then again in the October 1974 issue. Other creatures based on the legend or named for it appear in various films and television shows, including Dark Was the Night and Ravenous. Television series include Teen Wolf, Supernatural,
woo,
Blood Ties, another Charmed episode, Grimm, and Hannibal. And Hannibal, the FBI profiler, has recurring dreams or visions of a Wendigo that symbolizes the titular cannibalistic serial killer. Titular. I just see tit.
So does Dean.
Wendigo appears in DuckTales Christmas Special, The Last Christmas, in which the creatures are described as poor souls turned into monsters by obsession and desperation.
I don't remember DuckTales being so dark.
I believe this was the new DuckTales.
Okay.
Because I believe I saw it last Christmas and was kind of like, that's a little weird, DuckTales.
I keep wanting to just go, woo, every time you say it. I'm sorry.
Every time.
I'm trying real hard not to.
Our friend Deanna. Hi, Deanna.
Hi, Deanna.
Talks about your favorite.
My boy.
Deanna likes the trickster.
He Swoon. If he ever listens to this, I'll be so embarrassed.
Every time I listen to the Kings of Con podcast and he starts talking, I just think of you.
Oh my gosh. Like, oh. I hope part of me wants like him to ever hear this, and then part of me hopes he never hears this.
Deanna says that the trickster will always be her favorite when he is classified as a monster on Super Wiki. You have to make that distinction because...
Yeah. Well, he has many facets, as we find out.
Yes. But if we are talking about true monsters, I would have to pick the Scarecrow from Season 1, which I think is good. That's a good one. I like that.
It was just a very well-filmed episode and story.
Oh, yeah. All the dark...
It was very classic monster movie type.
See, you know what I'm talking about. I don't have to explain it. I'm like, you know, the dark. And you're like, yes.
With the trees and the...
Yeah, the trees and the scarecrow guy and you know, the people in the town. And there was a house and an orchard. And
maybe a sacrifice. I don't know.
You know, there was the creepy basement that, you know.
So we go to our good friend, Frankie Winchester.
Hi, Frankie.
Hi, Frankie. So Frankie says that I'm not fond of monsters. I like the brothers more. Agreed.
Yes.
Now, if you'd ask for creepiest, that would be the Wendigo or Scarecrow. Totally creep me out. But I wouldn't call them favorites. I do feel that. I feel like it's hard to call monsters favorites.
I agree. That's true.
Like, I love Freddy Krueger, but I like him because he's a creative killer. And you cannot not sleep. So he's going to get you somehow.
That's true.
And that is terrifying.
Freddy going to get you.
He going to get you.
Yeah.
You know who also going to get you? That Scarecrow. That Scarecrow gonna get you.
He gonna get you.
So obviously, and Scarecrow.
is that what we're calling it now? Scarecrow.
Scarecrow. I mean, he's scurry.
I'm so scared.
I wanted to go through and do a couple of his nicknames. So
do
to
tell.
German settlers, he was known as the Butzemann. To the Scots, he was the Tatabogie. What'd you think about it? Like, a bogey is like a spirit-ish. Yeah. And tattered clothes.
Okay.
And to the Japanese, he is the kyubiko. And this was used as early as the 8th century to keep sparrows from coming and stealing the rice. And according to the Kojiko, which is a record of ancient matters, circa 712, that old book.
I was like, that's on the internet?
It is quoted, though his legs do not walk, kyubiko know everything. Which to me is just terrifying.
Oh, that gave me chills.
Like, he doesn't move. His legs obviously don't walk, but he sees and knows all. Like, that is terrifying to me.
That is so creepy.
Now, the most known scarecrow is known as Feathertop. Feathertop is actually the main character of a short story by Nathaniel Hawthorne, which was written in 1852, in which a scarecrow is brought to life to seek revenge on a judge by an evil witch.
Those witches.
Darn witches. So he actually looks somewhat human, and he actually believes that he is human.
Oh, the scarecrow does.
Yes.
Ew.
And in doing so, going to seek revenge, the scarecrow actually falls in love with the judge's daughter.
What?
But she actually, she recoils in horror because he's a scarecrow.
Really? She doesn't find that attractive.
No. Which actually hurts his feelings because he thinks he's human.
Yeah.
In turn, the scarecrow never really fully seeks revenge on the judge, but he's actually doomed to depression. My words, it doesn't actually say that in the story. But revenge is actually successful because the daughter is so traumatized that therefore it bothers the judge.
That did end how I thought it was going to.
And I don't know if this ties in or not. However, I remember German settlers would sometimes add a female counterpart to their Butzemann at the opposite sides of the field or orchard. So I don't know if they read this or heard this story and was like, he falls in love. He needs a companion because obviously he's going to be real sad.
Oh, so they give him a lady crow.
So they give him a lady crow. So a Butzewoman.
Oh.
I don't know if that's real.
It is now.
There's that.
Whatever we say is truth.
Yes. So that's my little tidbit. Because I remember I went into like full detail on the scarecrows.
Yeah. The only, I didn't write this down, but the only scarecrow that I can think of that I always talk about is from Scary Stories 3. Stories to Tell in the Dark 3. Harold.
Harold the Scarecrow.
Who will skin you and put you on the roof.
The main scarecrow. Oh, do you ever see Sleepy Hollow?
Yes.
That scarecrow with the pumpkin face.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make it. It's my favorite scarecrow. Just tossing in my favorite scarecrow for this.
If you have a favorite scarecrow,
let us know what your favorite scarecrow is. Is it from Wizard of Oz? Is it from a horror movie?
Is it a happy scarecrow? Story? Or
maybe you've read Nathaniel Hawthorne's Feathertop. I don't know.
It's a scarecrow that thinks he's real.
Yes. Should we talk about my love now or
Oh, yes.
Later?
Talk about your love. Go for it.
All right. And then I got a fun game for you.
There's a game?
Uh-huh.
This just got so much better.
So I wanted to talk about two famous tricksters, and it's not the one you think I'm going to talk about. I didn't want to bore everybody with Loki, because that's also my other love. So I'm actually going to mention a couple little tidbits about Chinese culture, a.k.a. the Legends of the Monkey King.
The Monkey King?
The Monkey King.
Okay.
So the Monkey King can date back as old as the 9th century. So this crafty king...
Oh, crap.
And King Louis-ish.
Okay.
He was born with incredible intelligence, which actually allowed him to master numerous magical tricks, including shapeshifting into 72 images and somersaulting across the clouds. He actually became so powerful that he eventually got into many altercations with the Jade Emperor, the Lord of Heaven himself.
Is that someone you want to fight with?
No, not usually. Okay. However... none of Heaven's warriors could ever lay a finger on the Monkey King.
Oh, okay.
Then we have Hermes, which I did mention when we were talking about tricksters. And I wanted to focus a little on Hermes because he doesn't seem like he'd be a really bad Greek god. He'd seem like the kind of most harmless. Because he's small, he has no realm to really roll over, he's young. However, there is zero end to his mischief. Since he is boyish, he likes to play tricks.
Oh.
He has notoriously itchy fingers and has been known to steal Apollo's cattle, Poseidon's trident, Artemis's arrow, and let's not forget Aphrodite's girdle at numerous times.
Oh, how did he get that?
It didn't go into detail, but I'm sure he got creative.
Was there something fishy going on there?
Well, it doesn't hurt that he was a very smooth talker, very Loki-esque.
Talker right out of her girdle.
And he was so good with his words that he actually earned the position of diplomat and messenger between the gods, so he could move between humans and the gods. And when he couldn't find any kind of large scheme to involve himself, he would usually amuse himself with tricky inventions. He's known or responsible for inventing the game of dice, bewitching lyre, music, fire, and the art of lying. He is also known as the Herald of Change, and he usually appears when things kind of need a good shakeup, when he decides that everything is too boring.
Isn't that true?
Right. And then the last one I wanted to talk about was the one that I kind of mentioned but didn't really go into, was Anansi, who is the West African spider, who is kind of known as a folklore hero. He is honored for his intelligence and beautiful command of language, again. And according to one of the Ghanaian tales, he is god of all stories, which he apparently purchased from the sky god by tricking and capturing a python, a leopard, and a hornet, and delivering them to the sky god's home.
All at the same time?
Yep.
Well, I mean, take my stories then too, because...
Obviously, when slavery became big into other foreign lands, and obviously there was a lot of oppression by cruel authority figures, Anansi's popularity actually blossomed. He became a powerful symbol of hope to slaves in the Caribbean nations and in the southern United States. They were encouraged by his craftiness and his ability to become stronger, loftier, and more charismatic. His famous wordcraft might have actually also inspired slaves to begin hiding secret messages in songs and folktales to spread to other groups, which eventually would lead to the escape of hundreds of slaves.
Interesting.
You go, Anansi. You use that trickery for good.
For real.
Get it.
I like these history knowledge bombs.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to focus on those guys. Anansi, I thought, was really cool just because he was used as a symbol during a very rough era. If you want me to toss some pop culture knowledge bombs on you, I can.
Go for it. Give me the Marvel knowledge bombs.
So Loki first appeared in the 1962 issue of Thor as Thor's stepbrother and often arch enemy. He is actually ranked one of the greatest comic book villains of all time.
Really?
Yeah. Not a little bit behind, you know, the Joker and Lex Luthor. And obviously, you didn't hear it, but I snapped Thanos.
I saw it, and I knew what it meant. You'd have been so proud of me. I was like, oh.
Obviously, he made his first appearance in the what is known as the Silver Age of comic books. In the cinematic Marvel Universe, he is played by my other love, Tom Hiddleston, while Odin is played by Anthony Hopkins, and obviously Thor is played by Chris Hemsworth. And then also, you can find Loki in the CW's Supernatural, portrayed by Richard Spate Jr. Although this version of Loki is less glamorous and more gritty, it stays more true to the trickster spirit of Norse mythology.
He's more gritty?
He's a little more gritty, according to some websites. I didn't say that, Richard Spade Jr. I would never say that. Then again, Loki doesn't really watch porn in Marvel, but hey.
Not that you see. You don't know that it doesn't happen.
Yeah, he's tricky, man.
You just don't see it.
He becomes female Loki when he takes over Sif's body. There's multiple versions of Loki, not to mention he is half frost giant.
Thank you for that knowledge, Mom.
You're welcome. Shall we hear what Brittany has to say?
Yes. And this is going to be a little conversation between me and Brittany.
Okay.
Because that's how it went down. Hi, Brittany.
Hi, Brittany.
So Brittany said, I'd have to say the woman in white will always be my favorite. If it wasn't for her case, then Sam and Dean never would have gotten back together. But I also really liked the Benders because it showed them that humans can be monsters too. It really opened their eyes to what else is out there other than our normal monster of the week. And then I said, going back to the beginning, Brittany, I like it. So I also like your point about the Benders. The non-supernatural was harder for them to understand than the supernatural. And then Brittany responded, yes, very much. You could tell how surprised they were to find out that they were human. She said she really had to think about that one because she could choose so many monsters that were her favorite.
There are a ton to choose from. And coming from our natural friends.
Hi, natural friends, a supernatural podcast.
They said, we only just started season 2. Don't worry, guys. We just finished it, so you can catch up. But we really liked The Reaper from Faith and Bloody Mary. I have to agree with @BritShay28. The woman in white is pretty awesome. And I love all things vampires. Always excited when they show up. Good, because they show up a lot later.
A lot.
A lot, including, like, Big Daddy Vamp.
Lot.
Known as the Alpha. Let's get it started. I don't want to... his official name. I don't call him Big Daddy Vamp, but I will now.
You don't? I mean, that should be his name now?
That's his name now.
Because I feel like it fits.
I feel like he would have no problem slitting my throat for that. Yeah. So do you want to start with the woman in white?
So I actually have two parts to this because I didn't feel like she was all... Because there's the La Llorona, but I didn't feel like this woman in this was all La Llorona. I feel like she was part La Llorona, and I feel like she was part Vanishing Hitchhiker.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Because, I mean, when it's, you know, the guy stops on the side of the road to pick her up, and, you know, she gets in the car, and...
Then she disappears when they get to the house.
And then she freaks out.
Because she disappeared on Sam, too.
Yeah.
When they got to the house.
Mm-hmm. So, I wanted to... So, the La Llorona... in Hispanic American folklore, is also known as the Weeping Woman or the Wailer. She is a ghost who roams waterfront areas mourning her drowned children. In a typical version of the legend, a beautiful woman named Maria marries a rich ranchero with whom she has two children. One day, Maria sees her husband with another woman, and in a fit of rage, she drowns her kids in the river. Because, I mean, why not? That doesn't make sense to me, but...
It seems to be a thing where mothers just drown their kids in the rivers.
What
it
if she...
pretty...
What if her husband was just, like, talking to this lady like he was borrowing some eggs or something, you know? Like, it wasn't anything to be suspicious of. Anyway, so she drowns her kids in the river, which, of course, she immediately regrets. Unable to save them and consumed by guilt, she drowns herself as well, but is unable to enter the afterlife without her children. And another version of the story, her children are illegitimate, and she drowns them so that their father won't take them away to be raised by his wife. A recurring theme and variations on La Llorona myth include white dresses, nocturnal wailing, and an association with water.
So you're safe during the day.
You're safe during the day, but once it turns nighttime...
Wailing.
All the whales.
Ooh.
And not the SeaWorld whales.
They wail too.
So there's one movie, which it's not really La Llorona, but it's kind of similar. Did
Is
you see
the movie La Llorona?
No, I didn't go that. Did you see Mama?
No, but I need to.
I saw this in the movie theater.
Oh, you fancy.
I know. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be about from like the previews I saw, but it was still a good movie. Well, the ghost at the center of Mama isn't La Llorona. There are obvious parallels between the two. The creepy entity acting as the mother to the orphan Lillian Victoria was once Edith Brennan in life. A woman who was committed to asylum and separated from her baby. She escaped from the asylum with her baby, and she ended up jumping off a cliff and drowning in the water. Her ghost spent the next century wandering the woods in mourning, looking for her lost child. Like La Llorona, Mama is a ghost created out of profound grief for her lost child, a loss that was entirely her own fault, and doomed to wander the area where the loss occurred. So then moving from film to TV, there was an episode of Grimm. Did you watch Grimm?
No, I hadn't.
I didn't watch it either. There is apparently a Halloween episode in season 2, which featured La Llorona. In Grimm's version, La Llorona moves from city to city, actually stealing and drowning 3 children in a river just prior to midnight every Halloween. It turns out that La Llorona sacrifices the 3 kidnapped children in hopes of getting her own back. The heroes in the show work to save the kids before the stroke of midnight, of course. Guess what? They succeed.
Oh, no.
But unlike in Supernatural, where Supernatural would have like killed La Llorona or got rid of her, she's still out there. Her spirit is free to kidnap more children in another city. This version also borrows from La Manche. Origin of La Llorona is an ancestor of lead protagonist Nick on the show Grimm. Once encountered their spirit while traveling in Cortez in 1519, she cries tears of blood and has a much ghastlier appearance hiding beneath the surface in this version.
Okay.
Creepy. So then onto the Vanishing Hitchhiker, because I, like I said, I feel like she was kind of both Vanishing Hitchhiker is also known as the Ghostly Hitchhiker, the Disappearing Hitchhiker, the Phantom Hitchhiker. It's an urban legend in which people traveling by vehicle meet with or are accompanied by a hitchhiker who subsequently vanishes without explanation, often from a moving vehicle. Public knowledge of the story expanded greatly with the 1981 publication of Jan Harold Bruvon's nonfiction book, The Vanishing Hitchhiker. In his book, he suggests that the story of the Vanishing Hitchhiker can be traced as far back to the 1870s and has recognizable parallels in Korea, Tsarist Russia, and among Chinese Americans, Mormons, and Ozark Mountaineers. Similar stories have been reported for centuries across the world. Common variations... The hitchhiker departed as a normal passenger, having left something in the vehicle or having borrowed a garment for protection against the cold. The vanishing hitchhiker may also have some form of information that encourages the motorist to make subsequent contact. In such accounts of the legend, the garment borrowed is often found draped over a gravestone in a local cemetery. In this and other versions of the urban legend, an unsuspecting motorist makes contact with the family of the deceased person using the information the hitchhiker left behind and finds that the family's description of the deceased matches the passenger the motorist picked up, and also finds that they were killed in some unexpected way, usually a car accident, and that the driver's encounter with the vanishing hitchhiker occurred on the anniversary of their death. You know, I've been watching, you know, like those most haunted shows, like the most terrifying places on earth or whatever.
Yes.
And in American Hauntings podcast, and in the cemetery book I've been reading, there are cases of these like all over the United States, where people have, you know, vanishing hitchhikers. They were driving down the road and they saw this girl, and she said she was coming home from a dance and she needed a ride, and they would take her to her house, and then it ended up, you know, their jacket was left on a gravestone, and they would go up to the door and the mom would be like, oh, that was my daughter, but you know, she died 15 years ago, and stuff like that. I find it interesting.
Sad.
It's sad. It's really sad. But I find it so interesting. It's like, I kind of want it to happen to me, but I'd be freaked out.
Oh yeah, easily.
You know? I'd be like,
completely unnerved.
Another interesting thing I found is that there's actually classifications for vanishing hitchhiker stories.
What?
So, there was a proper study done.
Oh.
The first proper study of the story of the vanishing hitchhiker was undertaken in 1942. Like, that's a long time ago. Like,
it is.
During World War II, there was a study about vanishing hitchhikers. It was done by American folklorist Richard Beardsley and Rosalie Hankey, who collected as many accounts as they could and attempted to analyze them. It became known as the Beardsley-Hankey Survey. They elicited 79 written accounts of encounters with vanishing hitchhikers drawn from across the United States, and they found 4 distinctly different versions, distinguishable because of obvious differences in development and essence. So they go A, B, C, D, or how they have it separated. So A stories, where the hitchhiker gives the address through which the motorist learns he has just given a lift to a ghost. That was actually 49 of the samples they had.
What?
Fell into this category, and it was
Holy Lord.
Yeah, it was responses from 16 different states where they had similar stories. B stories, where the hitchhiker is an old woman who prophesizes disaster or the end of World War II. A subsequent inquiries likewise reveal that this lady has been deceased. That was 9 of the samples they had, and 8 of these came from Chicago.
Oh my.
So they felt that the B stories indicated like a local origin, which they dated back to approximately 1933. And 2 of the B hitchhikers in the sample foretold disaster at the Century of Progress Exposition, and another foresaw calamity at the World's Fair.
Ooh.
Ooh, calamity at the World's Fair. The strict topicality of these unsuccessful forecasts did not appear to thwart the appearance of further version B hitchhikers, one of whom who warned the northerly island in Lake Michigan would soon be submerged. It has yet to happen.
Oh, well, there's still time.
The northerly island is still there. Yeah, I don't know if this version B hitchhiker gave, you know, a date.
We might not have all the information.
Exactly. So then there's C stories, where a girl is met at some place of entertainment, for example, in a dance, instead of on the road. She leaves some token, often the overcoat she borrowed from the motorist, on her grave by the way of corroborating the experience and her identity. The uniformity amongst separate accounts of this variant led Beardsley and Hankey to strongly doubt its folkloric authenticity.
Ooh.
I think that's the coolest one, though.
I like that one a lot.
Like, that's the one, like, this girl's, you know, walking home from a dance, and the guy picks her up and, you know, gives her a coat, and, like, drives her to her house, or she gets out of the cemetery. That's always what it was. She's like, stop here, stop here, and she gets out of the cemetery and then disappears. And then he walks and he finds his jacket on the gravestone. I'm getting goosebumps right now. Those are my favorite. So then there's D stories, where the hitchhiker is later identified as a local divinity.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Sure.
Beardsley and Hankey were particularly interested to note one instance that happened in Kingston, New York in 1941, in which the vanishing hitchhiker was subsequently identified as the late Mother Cabrini, who was a founder of the local Sacred Heart Orphanage and who was beatified for her work. The authors felt that this was a case of version B glimpsed into a transition of version D. Oh, snap. She was two different ones.
Oh, man.
She was an old woman and she was a divinity. So Beardsley and Hankey concluded that version A was closest to the original form of the story, containing the essential elements of the legend. Versions B and D, they believed, were localized variations, while C was supposed to have started life as a separate ghost story, which at some stage became conflated with the original Vanishing Hitchhiker story. So they don't believe C at all. They're like, C, no.
C's isn't real.
Yeah, which is rude. Other conclusions certainly seems reflected in the continuation of the Vanishing Hitchhiker stories. The hitchhiker is, in the majority of cases, female, and the lift giver male. Beardsley and Hankey's samples contain 47 young female apparitions, 14 old ladies, and 14 more indeterminate.
Indeterminate.
So, yeah. But they weren't the only ones that did a study. There was Ernest Brofman, whose Type and Motif Index of the Folk Tales of England and North America in 1966 delineates the basic vanishing hitchhiker as follows. It says that ghosts of young women ask for a ride in automobile, disappears from closed car without the driver's knowledge after giving him an address to which she wishes to be taken. The driver asks person at address about rider, finds that she has been dead for some time. Often the driver finds that the ghost has made similar attempts to return, usually on the anniversary of the death in automobile accidents. Often, too, the ghost leaves some item, such as a scarf or a traveling bag, in the car. And he went into further detail. He doesn't just have A through D. He has A through J.
I feel like that's something we need to share on our Facebook.
I can put that up there. So, and they're, I mean, they're pretty much, some of them are pretty much the same. So A would be vanishing hitchhikers who reappear on anniversaries. B is vanishing hitchhikers who leave items in vehicles, unless the item is in a pool of water, in which case that's C.
Sure.
D is for accounts of sinister old ladies who prophesize disasters. Not just regular old ladies, sinister old ladies. E contains accounts of phantoms who are apparently sufficiently solid to engage in activities such as eating or drinking during their journey. F is for phantom parents who want to be taken to the sickbed of their dying son. G is for hitchhikers simply requesting a lift home. And H through J, not sure why it gets all those letters, are categories reserved exclusively for vanishing nuns, which apparently is a surprisingly common variant. And some of those nuns who foretell the future.
Okay, yeah. Beware of the nun.
Yeah. So then the phenomenon blends into religious encounters like Beardsley and Hankey did. To the next and last vanishing hitchhiker classification being for encounters with divinities who take the road as hitchhikers. The legend of St. Christopher is considered to be one of these, and the story of Philip the Evangelist being transported by God after encountering the Ethiopian on the road is sometimes similarly interpreted.
All right.
That was a lot, but I thought it was interesting that there were multiple people that classified vanishing hitchhiker accounts.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I didn't know there were different classifications. I thought they were all just vanishing hitchhikers.
Oh, no, no. No, we break it down.
Break it down now. All right. So if you're all still with us, we're talking about monsters.
if that was too much for you and you tuned out, come back.
Because right now I got some humans.
Is it the Bloody Benders?
It is, but I didn't want to focus on the Bloody Benders because I thought we covered pretty well a decent job, but I like the idea that they thought that humans were more terrifying than the supernatural. So I want to talk about a couple family killers, and not the people that kill your family, but the families that kill together.
Family that kills together stays together.
You know, and there's some fascinating. So we start off with the Bean Clan.
Ooh.
So the Bean Clan is more of a legend than necessarily real, but the story goes, in 16th century Scotland, Alexander Sawney Bean, who was a Scottish farmer, and took his wife, and they actually took residence in a cave called Benan Cave after they were married. And he decided...
I'm glad they were married first.
Yeah, well, they were married before they took out the cave.
Yeah.
You have to. You can't just take a cave before you get married.
No, you have to be married for the cave.
So rumor has it that he actually decided to support his family by robbing travelers. He then determined that he should probably kill the victims so he would never get caught.
Oh. I mean, sir, that's not how that works.
So robbery turned to murder, which then quickly turned to cannibalism.
Wow. That was a quick step there.
Yeah, and then they supposedly had 14 children and 32 grandchildren, all through incest, because they lived in a cave. And they lived on a diet of human meat.
Oh.
And as soon as the children started to grow up, they also took part in the murdering and the cooking.
Oh, my God.
Legend has it that they have consumed and killed 1,000 victims within a span of 25 years. And the end of the story comes when King James VI of Scotland sent a party of 400 royal soldiers accompanied by bloodhounds to find and execute them.
I just had a thought. How big was this cave?
It had to be a decent... Like, do you think they upgraded the cave?
I don't know. Did the incestuous kids have, like, different caves?
I don't know. It sounds like one cave. One cave, big family.
Oh, that's gross.
So from legend to real families, we have the Tavardiava family. They supposedly are responsible for murdering 30 people in the Rostov region of Russia from 2007 to 2013. The mother, Inessa, gave up her job as a nursery school teacher, along with her dentist husband and their two daughters, to rob people and kill them while traveling under the guise of going on family camping trips.
You're a dentist?
You're a dentist and a nursery school teacher.
Does it not pay well in Russia to be a dentist? Because, I mean...
Apparently it's worth killing and robbing people.
It's a pretty good job here in the United States. Just throwing it out there.
The youngest daughter was only 13 at the time the family was apprehended, but she was not charged with any crimes. Supposedly, Inessa's husband, Roman Podkopavye, was also supposedly involved. So it wasn't just them, it was his family too. And what they would do is break into homes, rob and kill the victims. And sometimes they would just kill the victims in the cars if they weren't actually inside the house. Among the family victims, 6 policemen were also murdered for their weapons and money.
Oh my God.
Inessa showed no remorse, including saying, "I'm a gangster by nature." Straight up G. And that killing was a means of earning money.
He was a dentist. Like,
yeah, she was a nursery school teacher.
Come on, people.
So then we move on to the Gonzalez sisters. And the Gonzalez sisters didn't mess around. Supposedly they killed 90 people in the 50s and 60s.
In the 50s?
Yep, in the Guanajuato state, north of Mexico City, Delfina and Maria de Jesus Gonzalez, Venezuela, ran a brothel called the Rancho El Rancho, aka the Angel Ranch.
Oh, no. No.
Featuring prostitutes that they kidnapped and enslaved.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so they would actually recruit people by promising jobs of being a waitress or a maid and then force them into prostitution.
Ugh.
And when the enslaved women would become sick or refuse to have sex with customers, they would kill them by starving or beating them. And if a woman became pregnant, the sisters would force them to abort the children. Soon the property was eventually raided and bodies of several fetuses were found among adult victims.
Oh my God.
A little tidbit of information. The sisters currently hold the Guinness World Record of most prolific murder partnership with a 90 body count. In 1964, each sister received a 40-year prison sentence, which is the maximum sentence in New Mexico.
Wow.
Don't worry, sisters aren't the only ones to kill people together. We have the Harp brothers.
Oh, okay. Brothers. Brothers.
So we have Makaija, Big Harp, and Willie, Little Harp. apparently nicknamed due to their size difference.
Please tell me that Big Harp was actually little and Little Harp was big, because that would be perfect. Amazing.
But I don't think so. So in 1775, in their homestead in North Carolina, they decided to leave in search of money and adventure, traveling through the wilderness and lawless backwoods of Kentucky and Tennessee during the after the American Revolution. They soon became outlaws and murderers. And from 1781 to 1799, they murdered dozens of victims from Tennessee to Illinois.
For S's and G's?
Yeah, you know, sometimes they would team up with some outlaws along the way. Sometimes they would just do it on their own. But they did have a signature. And their signature was disemboweling the bodies of the victims, filling them with rocks, and then throwing them into the river to sink. Let that sink in.
What would they do with the insides?
So in 1799, one of the reasons that they stopped was one of the brothers was shot by a father of one of the victims. The other brother escaped, was finally captured and executed in 1804. They confessed to killing 39 people, but they may have killed up to 50. And they are supposedly one of the potential first serial killers of America.
Wow.
Then there is the Kelly family, similar to the Benders. They were a family of four, a husband, a wife, a son, and a daughter.
What were their
and
names?
They also lived in a remote region of Kansas. They were active in the 1800s shortly after the Benders escaped.
Oh, were they like, that sounds like a pretty good deal. Let's do what they did.
Well, were the Benders ever caught?
No.
Maybe the Benders are now the Kellys.
Oh, snap. Okay, I see where you're...
Apparently, whether or not they were the same family, they were just as gruesome. In December 1887, a hunt for a missing drummer from Chicago led a search party to the vacant Kelly house, because they just leave, where they found five bodies in the cellar and four buried under the stable. They also found a blunt axe covered with human flesh and hair. But they were, however, found. They were hunted down and hanged by the search party. And the father confessed that they had killed nine men and two women.
Again, for S's and G's? Like,
this is all it seems like. There's the Staffelback family.
They're like, you know what? We don't have TV. So we need something to do.
Just apparently stay out of Kansas.
Don't go there.
Stay out of Kansas. So the Staffelbacks were yet another family in Kansas in the 19th century. The mother, Nancy, was known as Ma Staffelback, similar to Ma Bender. And she had a pretty long life of crime before the family's murdering spree. In 1897, she, her husband, and their two sons were convicted of murdering a miner and dumping his body down an abandoned zinc mining shaft. Now, these guys were only convicted of one crime. However, it's believed that they have may have killed up to 50 people, all clients of the brothel they ran. The family's first victim may have actually been the girlfriend of one of the sons, Ed.
Oh.
The girlfriend and one of her friends had taken up residence in the house, because why wouldn't you just live there with a friend?
Why not?
Reportedly, the other son, Mike, beat one of the young women to death during a violent altercation, and to ensure her silence of the remaining woman, Ed beat her to death as well. They were also deposited down the mining shaft.
Oh.
Then you have the Brilly brothers, a set of three. Linwood Earl Brilly, James Darrell Brilly, a.k.a. JB, and Anthony Ray Brilly terrorized Richmond, Virginia in 1979. They were essentially a gang, and Linwood, the oldest, actually began killing at 16. He shot his 57-year-old neighbor while she was hanging laundry in the backyard for shits and giggles.
What? She's hanging her sheets. You don't... What?
He served 1 year in reform school.
Oh, my God.
Yep. They, along with another accomplice, killed at least 11 people in the Richmond area, although it's believed they may have killed up to 20. One victim had his skull crushed with a piece of concrete. Another was found with knives, scissors, and a carving fork stuck in his body.
Oh, what?
The victims include a pregnant woman and her 4-year-old son, and their killing spree lasted 8 months. They were finally apprehended and sentenced to prison. The youngest brother escaped execution because there was no evidence that he actually killed any of the victims. The eldest brother and the middle brother were sent to death row at Mecklenburg Correctional Center near Boynton, Virginia. While they were there, they actually led to the biggest death row breakout in history.
Oh, wow. Okay.
After holding hostages at the prison, the brothers and four other inmates escaped. Following a shootout with the FBI, the brothers were apprehended and executed in subsequent 1984 and 1985. And last but not least, there are the Wests, husband and wife, Fred and Rose, and they are known to have killed 10 victims from the 70s to the 80s in Gloucester, England. They would lure their victims by recruiting women to work as nannies for the children. and they would rape, torture, and eventually murder and dismember victims. Their families weren't safe like a lot of these guys were, because Rose had no problem killing her husband's 8-year-old stepdaughter, Charmaine, in 1971, while the husband was in prison.
What?
Mm-hmm. But don't worry, because once he was released, he dismembered and disposed of the body.
Oh my god.
The 16-year-old daughter, Heather, would eventually tell people that her parents were abusive, and they were arrested in 1995 after another daughter told a friend's mother about the abusive parents.
Wow.
They would eventually find 10 bodies of women on the property, and Fred West, the gem that he is, committed suicide before the trial, but Rose was convicted and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
What? Meow meow.
So the families that kill together stick together.
That's so creepy.
Yeah. So back to real monsters.
Real monsters.
We'll do these three last together. We're nearing the end of our monster mash. I hope you guys are sticking around and still doing the mash. You did the monster mash.
You did the mash.
Because we're still mashing monsters.
Our friends at Supernatural Virgin. Hi, Supernatural Virgin.
Hello, Supernatural Virgin.
Darren and Vasco.
You guys are awesome.
They say, which I'm assuming this is Darren saying this. Hard to pick one. I'll try. Fail, but only pick two. The Trickster for entertainment and the Scarecrow for creepiness.
He is creepy and the Trickster is entertaining. Then we go to Nicole.
Hi, Nicole. Hi,
Nicole. Nicole says, woman in white, vampire, shapeshifter, wendigo. Sorry, I have four.
It's hard to pick, Nicole. We understand. And then Hippie Chick 73. Hi, Hippie Chick.
Hello, Hippie Chick.
Vampires will always be my number one monster.
Good old vampire.
Good old vampire.
So I'll just dip in. Instead of talking about the Reaper, I wanted to talk where the Reaper came from. And okay. He originated in the Black Death. Because before then, yeah, the idea of death had always been there and the Reaper was always there. However, this is where the Reaper got his cloak and bones. So October 1347. Let's go back, shall we?
Oh, let's go way back.
12 ships from the Black Sea dock at a port of Messina, only to find most sailors dead or gravely ill, covered in black boils that oozed pus and blood.
Ooh.
This fleet would be known as the Death Ships. Eventually, 1/3 of the population, or roughly 20 million people in Europe over 5 years, would go on to die from the Black Plague, originally rumored to be called the Great Pestilence, killing many in China, India, Persia, Syria, and Egypt in the early 1340s. Many believed it was divine punishment by God, reaping souls deemed greedy, full of blasphemy, heresy, and fornication.
Oh, sorry, your face. Okay.
Now, this is where the idea of the Grim Reaper, or the Reaper, came from, knowing that he was reaping the souls of the less fortunate or those who deserved it. Black robes match robes religious figures wore during funeral services, where the scythe was known for harvesting, in this case, souls. This is when this began showing up in artwork and they became skeletons.
Ooh.
Which I'm happy they chose the skeletal look for death other than this oozing pus and blood boil.
Yeah, I'd be good without the pus and blood boil.
I also wanted to tie in here because I know in the actual Reaper episode, I talked about the Valkyrie. And in one of my researches, I actually forgot to mention this then, but the Valkyrie actually means chooser of the slain.
Oh.
So they got to choose the slain.
Okay.
And then obviously escort them to Valhalla. On to shapeshifters, skinwalkers, or doppelgangers. We'll go to the first skinwalker. Terry Sherman of Utah was walking his dogs when he came across a wolf 3 times bigger with glowing red eyes.
Well, that's terrifying.
This wolf was also unfazed when he shot him 3 times at close range in his hide.
Run away, sir.
This ranch that Terry Sherman owned and had just bought will soon become Skinwalker Ranch and is known to be paranormal.
Okay. That makes sense now.
Mm-hmm. Then you go to John Donne. I don't know. I'm saying John Donne, but it might be Donne. I don't know. It's D-O-N-N-E. I'm just going to call him John Donne.
Hey, John Donne.
16th century was an English poet. He claimed to be visited by his wife in Paris, who was not with him in Paris, holding a newborn baby and looking extremely sullen and sad. Around the same time, his wife would actually give birth to a stillborn baby.
Oh, that just gave me chills.
Goosebumps. And then there was Catherine the Great. Catherine was actually laying in her bed when servants came running in to tell her that they had just seen her enter the throne room. She confronted her doppelganger and shot her with a bullet.
What?
Obviously unfazed, it went right through the doppelganger, let's be honest.
I thought you couldn't do that.
You can't, because Catherine soon died after.
Oh, snap, okay. Catherine was a victim of her doppelganger.
That's why you don't want to ever meet your doppelganger, man. You want to avoid that doppelganger.
You know, what if that was like the first time, like the doppelganger would be like, okay, cool, you know, I see you, you see me. But then you shot at her.
So then she's like, okay, you're gone.
And she's like, okay, I'm sorry, I have to kill you now. That's how this works.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on those because I know in the actual doppelganger episode, I talk about famous cases of doppelgangers, including the most famous about the teacher, as well as Abraham Lincoln. But as soon as I found out about Catherine the Great, and then the other one that actually shows people kind of dealing with face-to-face doppelganger situations. And last but not least, we have the vampire. And I feel like I need to leave this up to you.
Oh,
because I already went hell, like, balls to the wall-y vampire episode, so.
I have to say that I was so overwhelmed by looking at vampire things, just because there's so much, so many
really
movies,
is.
So many vampires are found in comic books, film, folklore, games, music, paintings, television, and theater. Like anything you can think of, there is a vampire, something of it. A vampire is a creature from folklore that subsists by feeding on the vital essence, generally the form of blood, of the living. In European folklore, vampires are undead creatures that often visited loved ones and caused mischief or deaths in the neighborhoods they inhabited while they were alive. They wore shrouds and were often described as bloated and of ruddy or dark countenance, markedly different from today's gaunt, pale vampire, which dates from the early 19th century. So just a few, I think I have one from like everything I just mentioned. In comic books and graphic novels, such as Vampirella, 1969, Tomb of Dracula, 1972, Blade from 1973, 30 Days of Night, which is 2002. And
graphic novel, right?
Mm-hmm. And Dracula versus King Arthur from 2005.
Why not?
In addition, many major superheroes have faced vampire supervillains at some point. Now onto film. Let's just say too many to count.
Even counting the ones that are based on books.
I picked some here for us. So The Vampire in 1913, directed and co-written by Robert G. Vignola, is the earliest vampire film. And then A Vampire features in the landmark Nosferatu, which is 1922 in Germany, directed by Friedrich Wilhelm Murnau, which is actually an unlicensed version of Bram Stoker's Dracula. And I read that the Stoker estate actually sued their production and won, leading to the destruction of most of the copies of the film.
There's only one copy of the film left. And obviously, because it was a silent German expressionist horror films, they never said it was actually Dracula, but it is the closest to the actual description from the books, not the Dracula that we know. And it was played, the Count Orlok, which is the Dracula, is actually played by Max Schreck.
It was painstakingly restored in 1994 by a team of European scholars from the five surviving prints that had escaped destruction. Nosferatu is the first film to feature a vampire's death by sunlight, which formerly only weakened vampires.
And if you're interested, in Salem, there is Count Orlok's Monster Gallery, which is a wax figurine, kind of like Madame Tussauds of the horror movie variety.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Based on the Count Orlok from this.
Oh, that's neat. The next classic treatment of the vampire legend was the Universal's Dracula, starring Bela Lugosi as Count Dracula. 1931.
My man.
1985, there was a film called Life Force that contained a lot of nudity throughout the film. Because, of course, it was a female vampire, so. It says a female vampire seduces and kisses men to drain out the life force and leaves them dried out like some mummified corpses. The film has different bases for vampire folklore and has them seeded here from another planet coming on a spaceship.
Sure, vampires on a spaceship. I'm here
so,
for it.
So, alien lady vampires who apparently can't keep their clothes on.
Sounds also right.
In 1987, Lost Boys came out. It was one of the most popular vampire films of its decade, and it quickly became a teen heartthrob film for girls.
Well, I mean, you think about that kind of a cast. You got Kiefer Sutherland, Corey Haim, Jason Patrick.
Mm-hmm. Was Corey Feldman in that? Were the Coreys in it, or was it just
yes.
Corey Haim? Both Coreys were in it. Okay, mm-hmm. So the Coreys were hot in the 80s.
They were hot in the 80s, and therefore yeah. Lost Boys was hot, which is now a cult favorite. Ugh,
yeah.
I love that movie.
Bram Stoker's Dracula came out in 1992, and the film was based on the 1897 book. The film starred Keanu Reeves, Gary Oldman, Winona Ryder, and Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, Gary Oldman in that movie is phenomenal. He is a shapeshifter in and of himself.
Then there was 1994, Interview with a Vampire.
Yes.
Which starred Tom Cruise with Brad Pitt, co-starred actors Antonio Banderas, Kirsten Dunst, and Christian Slater.
I don't even like any of those guys, and that movie is hands down my favorite, and I somehow find Tom Cruise attractive.
I like Christian Slater when he was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Mm-hmm.
This film was based on the Anne Rice books, The Vampire Chronicles, and then also the movie Queen of the Damned was based on her books.
Yeah, she, if you really want to read anything vampire-ish, slightly erotic, Anne Rice.
Oh, so nudity, lady vampires, like in the other one.
Kind of, but they're not aliens.
Just kidding. And then I just wrote Twilight because I don't like Twilight.
We'll just touch on it. It's there.
I know a lot of people like Twilight. Your team, whatever. I don't care. Sorry if you like Twilight. I can't with it.
Vampire sparkle. I can't.
They can't.
They shine bright like a diamond.
They should not do that. I feel like there's some kind of disease going around if you're a sparkle vamp.
Mm-hmm.
So then we'll move on to TV. Because, no, I did not forget about Buffy the Vampire Slayer when I was talking about films. I prefer the television program.
Oh, but the movie's original, and it's got a good cast. It's what's his face? Pee Wee Herman. He's my favorite. When he gets stabbed, he's like, and he does it for, like, 18 hours.
I like how you go with Pee Wee Herman when I was like, Luke Perry was in that movie.
He was, too.
You're like, Pee Wee Herman was in that movie.
Played a vampire. He's just such a... Oh, that's death, man.
So Buffy the Vampire Slayer, 1997. My dad and I actually used to watch this show together.
I was obsessed with it. I went as Buffy for Halloween.
Oh, I like that. As I said, it was inspired by the movie. The vampires in this series are presented as strong but fundamentally fragile walking corpses, vulnerable to sunlight, decapitation, and stakes through the heart. Which, honestly, who would not be vulnerable to those things?
I'm vulnerable to those things, and I'm pretty sure I'm not a vampire.
Definitely stakes through the heart and decapitation. Most likely sunlight because I'm Irish.
Definitely sunlight, yeah.
And are clearly established as being demons possessing human corpses rather than humans corrupted by their vampire instincts. The vampire angel, hey, David Boreanaz.
Hey, Angelus.
is an exception to the rule. He was cursed with his soul over a century ago, restoring his capacity for compassion and grief, driving him to seek redemption for his sins in the spinoff series, Angel. And then there is True Blood, which was like the racy vampire show because it was on HBO.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of boobs in that one.
There was a lot of, yes, you are correct. It's 2008 to 2014. And I really liked this show, but for some reason I didn't watch the whole series. And I don't, probably because it was on HBO and I didn't get it.
It started getting real crazy. I watched 3 seasons.
Yeah, I had to like go over to my friend's house to watch it. That was just, you can't do that all the time.
No.
So it was a cable TV show about vampires, as well as a host of other supernatural beings. The series continues the folklore that vampires cannot walk in the daylight. And then I can't go without talking about the other CW show, The Vampire Diaries, which is 2009 to 2017. The TV series plot eventually has two brothers biding over the hand of a mortal girl who looks just like the vampire girl they knew generations ago. Vampires have daylight rings made by witches that allow them to walk in the daylight.
Sure.
Yes, daylight rings.
I would like the original name.
just it, the daylight ring. But then Vampire Diaries also spawned the originals, and I think now there's like the legacies or something like that. My friend Kristen is obsessed with Vampire Diaries. I tried to watch one episode, and I don't know if because I did the same thing with Supernatural. I started it recently, but there was one part, like the beginning of the one episode where he just kind of like floats down from like a second story building. And it just looked so fake. And I was just like, seriously, this is what we're doing. And then if you have children, Vampirina. Vampirina is a Disney Junior original series about Vampirina V. Hauntley, who moves from Transylvania to Pennsylvania with her family, all of whom are benevolent vampires. Fun fact, James Vanderbeek plays her dad.
Oh.
Yeah. It's such a cute show. She has her little pigtails that are actually like bat wings.
And then
it's
you have adorable. Hotel Transylvania.
If you haven't seen Vampirina, you should, even if you don't have kids. It's cute. I didn't go into like all the books and music, and you can seriously have a podcast just about that.
You can really focus on one episode, because the other ones that I did want to touch on that you didn't mention are, if you really like bloody vampire movies, then Hammer Films is where you want to go, where there are tons of Dracula movies. Mm-hmm. Brides of Dracula, Horror of Dracula, The Satanic Rites of Dracula. It's all Christopher Lee, mm-hmm. and some mainly Peter Cushing. They're really good. And then the other one that you didn't mention for kids, besides Hotel Transylvania, which obviously gets its namesake, is Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire.
Yes. Oh, how could I forget that?
From the 2000s with Caroline Rae, which is also a Disney Channel original movie, which is also the kid version, essentially, of the 1985, soon to be remade in 2011 movie, Fright Nights. Well, Fright Night, with the original one being Chris Sarandon, Amanda Bierce, and William Ragsdale. And the 2011, because I know you're all in for it, Colin Farrell, Anton Yelchin, and I think I'm just going to double check myself before I say it and sound like an idiot. I actually like this movie a lot, but it was definitely very much Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire. So David Tennant. The funny part is the original part of the story was done by Tom Holland. Really? He confused with Spider-Man Tom Holland. But yeah, there's, if you like vampires, there's a little something out there for you. And I think
literally everywhere.
Dracula, one of the main monsters, is a great way to wrap up our Monster Mash.
Monster Mash.
So hopefully you guys enjoyed that wrap up of monsters, and hopefully we touched on the monsters that you guys liked and you learned a little bit and got a little bit, and we hope you got in the Halloween spirit.
Yes.
Spooky season's greetings. All right, guys. Remember, share us with your friends. Slide into our DMs, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And obviously, guys, keep doing what you're doing. We hope you like what we're doing. And leave us comments, rate us, hopefully 5 stars. Happy hauntings.